There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. 107 FM Talk. Time is 107. This radio station's FM Talk 106.5. Hey, y'all. I'm Sean. And today is like the last day, right? The last city council meeting for three, right, of Mobile City Council members. We will be talking about that tomorrow on the show, among other subjects. But what do you think? Should I do some interviews with the net? It'd be fun. I think Mobile City Councilman for another week or so, right, or another... No, a couple days. John Williams told me he'd come back and talk with me after he left the council. I think we're going to do that. Maybe we'll try to get more on and hear their takes. You know, kind of what, now that you're gone, what do you want to say? So we may do that. But that's coming up to some of that discussion tomorrow on the show. Also, we'll get back to the Epps thing and some text here in a second. But you heard the news update, right, that FDA, they're meeting today considering the endorsement of the COVID-19 vaccine for children 5 to 11, right? So Wall Street Journal, which, by the way, I love, tell you what I think I love about Wall Street Journal stories. Like, you read the news story, and then it shows you what the stock is doing, right? Y'all used to that? Like, when you go through a Wall Street Journal online story, it'll be like, say, you know, experts advising the Food and Drug Administration are meeting Tuesday to consider endorsing the COVID-19 vaccine from Pfizer, Inc. And then it gives you a link. Pfizer shares up 0.80%. And BioNTech, they're down 0.64% for use in young children. So it's just, I like the fact that you can read the story and see what the stocks are doing upon the news. It says their positive recommendation would likely soon lead to an expansion of the U.S. vaccination campaign to millions of young children. FDA last week said the results from the company's late-stage study met the criteria for immune response from children 5 to 11 years old. Agency also confirmed data from companies showing that the shot was found to be safe and 90.7% effective at preventing symptomatic COVID-19 in a study of youngsters. All right, so it's the expert panel called the Vaccines and Related Biological Products Advisory Committee, those guys are fun to party with, is reviewing scientific data about the vaccine's safety and effectiveness in children and will vote to recommend whether the FDA should authorize use. Thumbs up from the panel could be followed within days by FDA authorizing the use of pediatric shots of the vaccine. The FDA, which regulates medical products, must clear a vaccine before it can be used outside of testing. Okay, we've talked about all that before. Here's what I think. Let's just get this over with. I think there should be, because they're now saying 5 to 11, we're beating around the bush. In utero, I think that's the bold move here from the FDA. If we're going to mandate vaccines, I don't even think we should let the children, they need to be vaccinated before they're born. If there's some way to do that in utero vaccination, and the baby's, you're in your third trimester. Time to get the jab and get a mask on that baby. Because they're being fed by an umbilical cord, but let's get a mask on that child, for God's sake. Let's not wait till they're five. It's irresponsible. The child should get the vaccination in the third trimester is when they should give the vaccination. This is, think about the profit from that, right? You could do it, come in for your appointment. Hey, ma'am, all right, it's your checkup here, and the baby, today we're going to do the vaccination of the child. Maybe that's the next thing they'll be discussing at the FDA. And let me pair this with J.D. Crow's cartoon over at AL.com. J.D. is a talented artist, and when I've been around J.D. in the past, he's a nice guy. But he is, his series of cartoons that I think, now I don't mind him lampooning Republicans. It's his job as a cartoonist to lampoon Republicans, right? Or Democrats, whoever would be in office. I mean, you punch up. That's what you're supposed to do. I get that. But the last years is stuff that's not even really true. It's like left-wing tropes that he does. Okay, so the one today has a picture of members of the Alabama legislature. They're all wearing like black hoods, like Grim Reapers or something like that. And it has Governor Ivey there. She's sitting at a desk that has a skull on the desk, and she's writing something there. It says, as long as I am your governor, Alabama will not force anyone to cheat death. And JD says here, vax mandates and fake mandates banning vax mandates are dead to me. Bless your heart, Kay Ivey. On to the special session. All right. We're talking about this Kay Ivey thing because I think her executive actions, so a big knee-jerk reaction from J.D. Crow, and maybe I'll have a, I don't know if mine will be knee-jerk, but a reaction on the other side of this from me. Because her mandate doesn't do anything. Okay, but let's say it did, even. Cheating death. Getting in your car could lead to you dying, right? The number of people, and I, once again, if you've just arrived at the show, this is not an anti-vaxxer show. This is not an anti-science show. It's a pro-liberty show, but it's not anti-science, not anti-vaccine. But if you're looking at the numbers overall for deaths from COVID, once again, this is not saying this is not a real deal because, I mean, we've talked about it. Personally, three people that were friends of mine, one of our coworker here who died early on, have died from COVID or COVID complications, okay? But because somebody doesn't have a vaccine, they're not playing Russian roulette unless somebody has a bunch of conditions, right? They have a lot of the conditions, the comorbidities and those things, okay. But outside that, they're not. How about the people who get it, who got the Delta variant, who were vaccinated, like in my extended family, right? What happened to us back in July? All kind of vaccinated people got sick. Were they cheating death? This is not fair. You can lampoon the governor all you want. I would expect that. I would hope for that. But tell the truth. And on the other side here, on the flip side of it, to tell the truth, Governor Ivey's executive order number 724, which thank you so much, Terry, on the text line, sent me a link to the governor's executive actions from when they started. She has not done 724. She just picked it up, I think, at 700 and whatever. Like, you can go back and so I think it's, so we've had 724 executive actions in the history of our state, I'm guessing. And you just pick up, like, if you're the new governor, you pick up wherever the last governor left off for executive actions. So Governor Ivey rolls this out. I retweeted it yesterday. This move here, this executive action to direct state agencies not to cooperate with the federal COVID-19 vaccine mandate where possible. And instead, here's what Todd Stacey writes at Alabama Daily News, and instead help with the state's efforts to file a lawsuit challenging the vaccination requirements. This is a kick the can down the road, is what this is. The directive is part of Republican officials' efforts to resist the Biden administration's vaccine mandate, but the impact of the Alabama order is unclear since it only can cover state executive branch agencies. It's not for businesses. It covers the executive branch. Ivey signed an executive order forbidding those agencies, including Medicaid, mental health, and human resources, from penalizing employees or businesses for noncompliance with the federal vaccine. Now, this does nothing for the businesses out there outside of the purview of the executive branch of Alabama government. If federal law requires the penalty, Ivey directed the state entity to take steps to notify the affected business or individual that Alabama does not condone the penalty. Come back. More on this next.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, it's 120 FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Segment of the show brought to you by Stamps.com. Stamps.com something we've done, I guess we first started a couple of years ago with Stamps.com. And as our small business here at Big Red Broadcasting, it's great because nobody's out getting stamps when they need to be doing something else to make this radio station better. That's the same, I'm sure, for your business out there. And Stamps.com brings the services. Here's how it works. Okay. They bring the services of the U.S. Postal Service and UPS shipping right to your computer. So whether you're sending out office invoices, have a side hustle, Etsy shop, or full-blown warehouse shipping out orders, Stamps.com will make your life easier. Now, let me put that in Sullivanese for y'all. We've got a computer and we've got a printer here, okay? We didn't have to get any special supplies, any special equipment, computer, printer, print your own stamps. And do it like, oh, we need more stamps. It's, you know, it's the 15th or it's the end of the month. Okay, we just print more stamps. You get exclusive discounts as well on postage and shipping from the United States Postal Service and UPS. And once your mail's ready, I mean, just stick the stamp on there and drop it off. We go drop it in the mailbox here, or if you have a pickup for a UPS order, just get them to come get it. So you can save time and money and do what we do. Use Stamps.com. No risk. And with my promo code Sean, which is my first name, S-E-A-N, spelled the fast way, you'll get a special offer that includes a four-week trial plus free postage and a digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. Just go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in Sean. That's Stamps.com, promo code Sean, S-E-A-N. Stamps.com, never go to the post office again. Right. It's a lot to do here. By the way, coming up in just about 10 minutes or so, AL1's Congressman Jerry Carl is going to join us. A lot to talk about with him. I may even get his take on the new map out there of what AL1. It's not a big, it's not some big, big change to what AL1's confines would be. But, you know, there's some folks, whether it be at a federal level or state level, are going to be voting a different district once they're done with this. All right. So from the text line here. So Phil says, the bigger Russian roulette is telling the vaccinated people who are in the at-risk group the vaccine's all they need, which we know is patently false. This has led to many deaths, meaning the elderly, obese, or with immune issues. To me, that's a bigger Russian roulette than not telling folks in those categories that the vaccine won't help you alone. That is how two of my dad's best friends passed away during Delta. They got vaccines and thought they were set and older and had basic health issues and got sent home after being positive and then passed away. You know, that's, yes, you still have to take, you know, and you know, this goes back to like the conversation from last hour. If you talk about that and you talk about the fact that you could still get, you know, now what I've seen in the data out there that I believe in is that people that are vaccinated have an easier time with it. Okay. So it's a therapeutic at that point, correct? It's a therapeutic. It's like a, it's pre-emerge, right? So ag folks or yard folks will know what I'm talking about. So you're putting a pre-emerge down to limit the amount of weeds or the damage from when they come up, right? So it's like that. But you can't then turn around and talk about ivermectin or something like that, because that's another thing that J.D. Crow made a cartoon about that was not truthful. That's another therapeutic. We should have access to a full suite of therapeutics. And people should consult with their physician and figure out what works for them. So Governor Ivey coming out with this, this is much to do about nothing, the 724, Executive Order 724. It is to keep it out of the special session, right, that's on redistricting and how to spend some of the ARP money. They get started later, Thursday? I think it gets started Thursday. And hopefully we'll have some senators and representatives on to talk about that. But the executive order. And by the way, this executive order comes out 3 days after, you know, Alabama and Auburn and announced employees must get vaccinated because of the federal mandate. But once again, don't think this executive order is like what you've seen in other states. Once again, here's what Todd Stacey writes. Ivy signed an executive order forbidding those agencies, which include Medicaid, mental health, and human resources, from penalizing employees or businesses for noncompliance with the federal vaccine mandate. If the federal law requires the penalty, Ivy directed the state entity to take steps to notify the affected business or individual that Alabama doesn't condone the penalty. But it would still have to go through the judicial branch. It still have to go through Steve Marshall's office. So it's something, but it's not. Maybe you dig into it one step beyond the headline and realize it's not what you might believe this order is. Further explanation here. It says, this is from Dylan Smith over at Yellowhammer. It said, Executive Order 724, entitled Combating Overreaching COVID-19 Vaccination Mandates, end quote, cites an array of actions that are to be undertaken by state government with the intention of ensuring Alabamians are protected against the enforcement of the Biden administration's vaccine requirements. Ivy's executive order directs all entities under the authority of the state's executive branch. Is that your business? No? Okay. To coordinate with the Alabama Attorney General's office to support litigation the state has brought against the federal government to combat the mandate's enforcement, which Attorney General Steve Marshall was on the show 3 weeks ago to talk about that's what they were doing. They're waiting for a case is what they're doing. Additionally, the governor's order states that no state governmental entity shall, quote, seek to impose a penalty on any business or individual for noncompliance with any federally imposed requirement that has a purpose or effect of forcing an individual to receive a COVID-19 vaccination or requiring a business to force its employees to receive a COVID-19 vaccination. In other words, they're not going to pile on. The state would not pile on. But it doesn't prevent the federal action. Goes on to say in Dylan's story here, the executive order further issues protections for state executive branch employees and contractors. Upon her issuance of the executive order, Ivy offered a statement declaring her intentions to stand against the enforcement of what she calls the Biden administration's egregious vaccine decree. So, and Governor went on to express optimism in state's abilities to defeat the White House in court over the issue. Of course, you know, does somebody lose their job in the meantime? It'd be easy for me to sit here and just rail on the governor the whole time, but she's got to figure out a path on this one, right? I mean, this is politics. This is what she's trying to do something to show she's doing something. I think also to keep it out of the special session, lest those hastier folks, right, get hold of it. But she's not doing something that is a straight up block of the federal. So the feds could come in, and the governor's saying, well, we're not going to double enforce that. And if they get in this, they need to report to the attorney general's office so we can use that in the case. But it's not a block. The quote from the governor yesterday, I think this is what I tweeted out. She said, I am adamantly opposed to the federal mandates related to the COVID-19 vaccine and adamantly opposed to the state mandates related to the COVID-19 vaccine, plain and simple. As long as I am your governor, the state of Alabama will not force anyone to take a COVID-19 vaccine. Through today's order, the state of Alabama is making our position on this issue crystal clear. State law in response to President Biden is not enough. Our courts are where this will be resolved. So she's telling the legislative branch that's getting ready to go in the special session, the courts, the judicial branch, is where this will be resolved. And you know, nobody in the executive branch is going to seek to find somebody out there. I mean, it protects executive branch contractors. That's what it does. I mean, that's what the move from the governor was. So don't get confused by it. All right. People say I'm giving the feds ideas about the enough text about this. That's sarcasm, y'all. That was when I said we should vaccinate babies in the third term. I'm joking. I'm going Jonathan Swift on it. I don't truly believe that. Okay, so that's where that comes from. All right, we come back from the break. AL1's congressman. Our congressman, Jerry Carl, is going to join us. We'll talk with him. A couple things. Of course, I'm a predictable one. There's some snapper policy to talk about, so we will get into that. But also talk about what's going on in Washington right now. And maybe some of the things we talked about in the first hour we can talk about with Congressman and AL1 getting redrawn a little bit. It's Clark County's out, and everything else is almost the same except a little part of Escambia County. But we'll see if that makes a difference in the politics of AL1 when we come back.
You're
listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 135, FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. Remember the brand new FM Talk 106.5 app waiting for you at the App Store for Apple users, Google Play for Android users. Just look for FM TALK 1065. You'll see our logo. That's us. Download the app. It's for free, and I think you're going to love it. It's like a digital multi-tool. It's like if you had an online Leatherman with all the different tools. It's got everything from streaming the station to the talkback feature where you can leave us a message should be played back on the air, to latest traffic maps out there, weather information, 55 hours a week of podcast, live local shows coming from right here at our studios at Airport and 65. That's just the tip of the iceberg. Check it out. FM Talk 106.5 app. All right. I mentioned as we went into the news, we're joined by our congressman, AL1's Congressman Jerry Carl. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Sean. Great to be with you.
So you feeling, if you looked at the map, the AL1 map that slipped out. So yesterday, right, we had got a little advanced view of the maps here as the redistricting discussion goes on in Montgomery. A little, not a ton of edits, but a little edit to AL1.
Yeah, I had to give up a little bit. Terry Sewell, which is north of me, obviously, she got the little piece of Clark County that I had. And then to the east of me, Barry Moore, I had to give some up to Barry Moore, and they took the eastern corner, basically, of Escambia County. So although it changed a little bit and changed the numbers a little bit, and I certainly hate losing those folks being in my district. I mean, that's a personal side of it. Overall, it's not a bad move for me at all.
Yeah, I was looking at it. I said, you know, I said, they released that part of Clark County. It's almost going to be to the county lines, you know, exactly. Until I saw that little smidgen of Escambia County over there on the east side.
Yeah, one of my favorite restaurants, Creek Bank, is right there across the county line. So I won't be able to represent them anymore, but that won't stop me from going and getting a hamburger.
There you go. That's a good thing. So, lots to talk about, and we will get around to talking Snapper because it's something you and I would like to do. But beforehand, give me an update here on the process in Washington on the infrastructure package. I mean, we've been told how they're going to pay for it with unrealized capital gains. tell me more about this.
I love that line. It won't cost you a penny. It won't cost you a penny. You know we wouldn't do it because it's not going to cost you a penny, but it's going to cost everybody, and in a form of higher prices on all the products that we're buying. We're already seeing it. I mean, it's a reaction to it, whether it's fuel prices or food prices. It's going up, and it's going to continue to go up, I'm afraid, unless this administration comes up with a better plan than what they're working on. But the infrastructure package, as we knew it, was $1.7 trillion. It seems to be stalled out. There's several factors there. One, extreme right want their $3.5 trillion passed the same time as $1.7 trillion. The Democrats keep telling us it's not going to happen. They won't pass them both at the same time. But the last word we got today is they're going to pass them at the same time.
We've been hearing that,
Democrats,
right?
Democrats know what they're doing.
Congressman, we've been hearing that. Didn't Speaker Pelosi say she was going to weld those two together, even though they were separated in the Senate, that she was going to weld them together in the House?
Yep. She's got to shore up the votes for both of them. The moderates won't give up ground, and the extremists on the right side won't give up ground. You know, folks need to pay attention to these bills. This is just not $1.7 trillion, whatever the amount winds up being. There's $3.5 trillion. There's a clause in there, Sean, that says, and it originally it said anything over a $600 transaction in your checking account per month would trigger the IRS to be notified, and they can go through and see how you're spending your money.
Right.
Well, the voters got together. The people has raised a stink about it. So now they've changed it. Now they've reworded it. Now it's $10,000 a year or more. Well, that's $843 a month where I'm from.
So wait a second. Are they going to tally?
Your checking account moves at more than $843 a month. So it's just a way for socialists I mean, this is pure socialist mentality. They want to get in every aspect of our life and control it. And we're really pushing hard on this one. And they keep wanting to downsize it. You're going to see them come back and go, well, we downsized the bill. No, they haven't. They've cut it in half, but instead of being $3 trillion, it's $1.5 trillion. Instead of it being 10 years, it's 5 years. And all I can say, I got a question for you. Have you ever seen a government start a program and then end it in that period of time that is designated for? No. In 3 years or 5 years, we will have to melt it into the budget, and it will keep growing from there. So we got to be smarter, and I'm talking about the elected officials up here. We got to be smarter than what we're our opponents. And our opponents on this one are actually the Democrat Party. And they're pushing it. They've got a fight going with themselves. And we're just staying out of the way. We're just letting them have it out.
Well, I mean, you got to. You don't have the majority to stop it. Right? I mean, you don't have...
We're going to change that in 2022.
A little bit about this. So let's talk about the players. Like you said, this is inside the Democrat Party, this battle going on. What, when you look at other House members, Democrats there, that are moderates on this, where's their benefit? Is it truly that they don't, it's not wanted in the district? Because I know the pressure must be immense from the party to play along if you want funding.
I had
the midterm.
I had dinner with one, and you know, the old was it Roosevelt had the CCC program?
Mm-hmm. WPA and CCC. Yep.
Yeah, well, they're trying to spur something like that in this $3.5 trillion package. And we don't have unemployment problem. We have employment mm-hmm. problem. We need people to get to work. We got 12 million jobs out there that we can't fill. So it's just the opposite. But I'll tell you another thing to look for is immigration. In this bill, it will give illegal immigrants instant citizenship. The moderate number we were given yesterday, and this is a guesstimate, the moderate number is 10 million new U.S. citizens overnight if this bill passes.
Now, how does that work?
It's probably going to be closer to 13.5 to 14 million, but because it's written in this bill. There are so many things, and we haven't seen a final version. We've just seen pieces of it. We probably won't see the final version until 24 hours before we vote on it. So you know, that's another good reason not to vote on it. I mean, we won't even have a chance to read it. But the citizenship is in there.
The mechanism, do you know how they do it? I mean, I know you say it's changed, but, like, is it a blanket amnesty or is it a
process? Yes, it is. Anybody
who's inside
the border today will be U.S. citizens after this bill passes.
So
that's how clean it's going to be.
If you get here, and we got this other wave of migrants coming up from Central America through Mexico coming our way, is basically if you get in here before this passes and you can prove that you're here, then you're a citizen.
You're a citizen. You're a U.S. citizen.
Cross illegally, doesn't matter.
You to all the benefits of a U.S. citizen, whether it's health care, whether it's financial help, everything you're entitled to. So, I mean, there are so many things in this bill that just make it horrible. Horrible. So we're the Republican Party, the leadership is spending a lot of time. We're sitting through at least two classes a day where they're schooling us on the things that they're finding in this bill, because we're trying to dig into it as much as we can. Because again, we're just getting pieces of it, and when it's all said and done, the majority of it we will never have seen other till 24 hours before the vote.
So those moderate Democrats talking about, so they're thinking they'd vote on, are they a no matter what, or they're saying, do they tell you privately that they're holding out for something? Because they're going to get punished by the party for this. Are they holding out for, is there a number, is there like Manchin in the Senate, is there a reduced version that they would vote for, or do they want them separate, or what do they want?
Well, they're not sharing any numbers with us. I did have dinner with a Democrat a couple of weeks ago, and he's the one that brought up that CCR, CRC, program. He said he was not going to pay people to stand and hold shovels under that program. That was a turning point for him. Oh, and did I mention those jobs are going to start at about $47 an hour?
Right. Well, this is all part of the program.
Now, what do you think that's going to do to the workforce in America?
This is a program because the Democrats couldn't get the minimum wage increase done. They're doing it this way. I mean, that's what this is, right?
Well, $47 an hour is what they're giving us. You're going to see a lot of people walk off their jobs and join this program. Mm-hmm. And can you blame them if you're making $20 an hour?
Nope.
You get a chance to double your income. So there's just so many problems, and it's so destructive to this country in the direction that you know, I feel like we need to be going. I don't understand what this administration's end game is. I mean, it's just pure destruction. Prices are going up, inflation's going up, everything's going up, and they're telling us they've got it all under control. The border, almost 200,000 come across. 1.7 million have crossed the border since January. And they tell us they have that under control. They've done nothing.
You know,
it's scary. And the only hope we got is 2022. We can hope that these two bills do not pass, and that will destroy the Democrat Party from the inside out, obviously. And then 2022, we can take control back. Try to bring some type of sanity back into this country.
It seems strange to me, and as I've watched President Biden, as he goes from one debacle to another, I wonder why he's touching the third rail here, right? The economy. And look at the polls that came out last week, the CNBC poll and a couple others, showing the approval rate way, way down. His loss amongst independents has been a 20-something percent support rate drop in independents. And he messes with things that are... That poll also showed that it's now equal with COVID, and this is their poll, that the fears about inflation. Yet he continues to do things that press inflation. It seems like he's signing his own demise here.
We all say we don't know who's in control up here as far as his administration, and we truly don't because there are some very poor decisions. I know he's got a very young staff. That doesn't have a lot of real life experiences, but that doesn't equate into the way they're just tearing this up. It's almost like they want it destroyed. It's almost like they want to see it fail. And I know that sounds odd, especially being an American, because it's in our DNA to want to win, and try to improve and do better. But I don't know any other way to explain it. It's almost like they want it to fail.
It's just, and I can say
they're
that.
They're doing a good job of it.
Yeah, I can see, you know, and I look at the text line and people talking about the policy and the Democrats want to, you know, burn it all down and all that. I don't know how, even if you took your ideological hat off for a second, pragmatically, how does that work? Because you can only influence the nation, which is frightening how much federal influence we have at the state level, but you can only do that when you get elected and you have majorities.
Well, if you come up with an answer, let me know. Because I don't have an answer for you. I don't know. I don't understand. And I keep using this term. I don't understand what their end game is. I don't understand what their focus. You know, we all want to get to a point in life, and that's what we're shooting for. But I just don't see it in what's coming out of this administration. And he is our president, and we're trying to work with him. And we'd love to sit down. I mean, the infrastructure package. I would love to put an infrastructure package together. Guess what? We need a bridge. And I'd love to talk about my bridge on this infrastructure package, but they've yet to let us sit down and have any communication whatsoever, any input into these bills and these infrastructure packages they're putting together. So I can call them bipartisan, but I promise you they haven't asked us any for our input.
Congressman Carl, let's go switch gears for a second here. And I spent the first part of this hour talking about Governor Ivey's executive order about the COVID mandates coming from the feds. I may have picked it apart some. What at a federal level are Republicans doing to deal with this executive order? Is there anything you can do?
I don't think there's anything we can do because we've talked about that and we've tried to figure out legally if we can challenge it. I think what's happening is the best thing. When you get, you know, 1,500 workers in New York City that march and protest, and you get 100 scientists out there in Nevada at a think tank that walk out, how do you replace that 100 scientists? I mean, that's not people you can just hire off the street at $10 an hour. So this administration start seeing that, they've got to back off. I mean, we're the land of the free, and I firmly believe in that. You know my opinion on my family. We're all vaccinated. I encourage anybody that's not vaccinated to talk to the doctor. But if you don't want it, it's not my job to mandate that you get it. It's not the federal government's job to mandate that you get it. If you get it, you know, that's your business, and that's your choice.
Let's and you've mentioned it a couple times, and you've mentioned it from way back, that the Republicans will take the House in 2022, right? That's happening.
Right.
No, you're not sandbagging at all. That's a
it's getting better every day. Unfortunately, at the expense of this country. That's the bad part. I don't want to win anything based on tearing this country apart, but we're getting pushed further and further apart in this country. And mm-hmm. I mean, look at the school board issue up in Virginia. We're up here. We see it. I mean, it is become a war up here on the school board, and people in this governor's race. But we've got 57 seats targeted. I firmly believe we're going to do at least half of that. I'll say 25 to 30. They're telling us now that it could be much higher than that. I want to take a good solid lead in the House and a good solid lead in the Senate. And I want to control the House and the Senate. If we do, you'll see us controlling the House and the Senate for the next 20 years. Well, that's the key to the big win in 2022. So it's important that we focus on 2022, because if we don't, it's over. It's over.
Any discussion up there of the messaging? Because what we've become in this country is just the other side stinks, so bring us in because they're bad. Is there any messaging that if Republicans take control, like you said, what are they going to do to make it better?
Well, we've already started talking about balancing the budget, how we can put a balance. But we had Newt Gingrich come in and speak to us the other day and tell us how he systematically got a balanced budget put together. It didn't happen overnight. I mean, it was why we'd hear him tell it. It took some time to put together. But we can do it, and we can start paying back some of this debt, getting this debt off the country. You know, those conversations are now beginning because we feel like we're going to take control. We're going to have a plan put in place that will enable us to step in and go, okay, this is how we're going to do it. This is the direction we're going to do it. You know, and this is why we're doing it. So that's where we're at. We're preparing to take over already.
All right. Before we run out of time on this, just a few minutes. But your op-ed over at Yellowhammer News about Snapper. Give us what you're seeing from the federal level. What does Snapper season next year look like?
And for us, it looks like it's going to be pretty much the same. Our problem is going to be the season after that, because we're going to have to go back and deal with the government, all these government agencies again. I did get several congressmen down. We did get to go out and fish with the University of South Alabama research boat. I got some of their staff down here. They understand it better. They understand the reef system better. They understand that we have 1,500 reefs out there. And I mean, they get it. They understand it. It was a light switch, and I knew it would be if I could get them to come down and spend the day out on the boat. We did it. They're telling the story on the Hill here. So hopefully when the debate comes up, we've got more voices up here to work with us.
Good deal.
I hate to be brief with you, but they're calling me on the floor. I'm about to miss a vote.
Don't miss a vote, Congressman.
I'm upset when I miss a vote.
We'll talk to you soon. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Sean.
There he is, Congressman Jerry Carl, and we're coming right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, Doug. Program note here, because I see the headline here, shipping delays, labor shortage, clogged supply chain, all that kind of stuff we've been talking about for a month plus on this show. Reminder, something I've been doing since we launched this show, my Locals Only Christmas list. Actually, I saw one of my Locals Only Christmas list vendors at the football game the other night. He said, "You doing it?" I said, yeah, we're back on. So I launched that usually in early December, and it's local vendors, maybe not the bigger stores you've ever heard of. People make cool stuff or have cool services around here, and it's a way to give gifts that are completely local and aren't dependent on supply chain. So that's coming up in early December. You've got a candidate for that. You can can always send me an email to Sean, S-E-A-N, at fmtalk1065.com. And also, some of my show notes for tomorrow, I don't know where this will go, but written on the back of a sheet here, I am ranking dollar stores. Ranking like store, like the worst to the best of dollar stores. This is the kind of stuff. Okay, we'll pick that up tomorrow. As we wrap, too, a ton of text. I'm sorry I can't get to everybody here, but a lot of people sending in places like Providence is losing nurses and doctors because of the mandate. Jason says people are saying their business get people shedding because of the mandate. We'll look at that. Y'all, if you have specific examples of that, always send that information to me. That's good. Steve says, Republicans balancing the budget, LMFAO. That's like the dirty version of LMAO, right? Or LMO, or what? I don't even know the clean version. And he said, you let him say it with Jerry Carl. Listen, if there was somebody, they all realize that that is a attractive thing to be. I also realize, Steve, that nobody can get elected on that, balancing the budget, because that means you cut programs and you raise revenue, right? That's where we're going to be one day, I guess. There's about 17 of us that would be for that candidate that would truly balance the budget and keep our spending in line. It'd be a lonely group. We'd be meeting in the bonus room back there at the restaurant where they have that extra party room. There'd be 17 of us in a meeting once a year that show up there. All right, Paul Feinbaum, he's on the way next. I will talk to y'all tomorrow.